You've hit play on The Screen Companion, an eclectic mix of film and TV recommendations.
Today we're talking about 90s sitcoms. That glorious era where NBC ruled the comedy landscape. We're going to talk about News Radio, Frasier, Wings, even the lowest viewed episodes of News Radio compared to how the ratings are now on network TV, that show would get a 6th, 7th, 8th season all in a row. John, what's News Radio about?
It's a workplace comedy about people who work at a radio station, specifically the WNYX news radio station, number 2 in New York, and it's about their interactions, I guess, their relationships.
It's a little weird, some of the coincidences among these shows, one of them being that Frasier and News Radio both take place at radio stations. I didn't realize that was such a great place to mine comedy gold.
Come on!
Revisiting this show, John, what are you struck by that makes it stand out in the pile of all the sitcoms back then?
I still find it really funny. I think I'm still laughing out loud at a lot of stuff.
It was appointment viewing for me when I was 10 or 11. I remember during commercial breaks, I'd play Game Boy. So 90s. I liked it so much. One of the commentary tracks on the DVDs asked for fan questions, and I submitted, and they mentioned my screen name in a 4th or 5th season commentary track.
Oh, what was your question?
Well, that's the thing. It was cool they mentioned me, but they made up attributions like this question was asked by Frank and a bunch of other fans, and it would be none of the 4 or 5 things I asked. Summarize the episode Smoking from the first season.
In accordance with the New York ordinance, the radio station becomes smoking-free, and Bill McNeil is an addicted cigarette smoker and has to quit. So to help him quit, Dave's character gives up coffee, and hilarity ensues.
Andrew, being new to the series, what stood out most about the show?
I was just noticing all these people. I was like, oh, that person. I know that person. I know that person. I know that person. It was a bunch of familiar faces. Like, I didn't know Joe Rogan was on News Radio.
I feel like this was his start.
It was very early in his career. He had been in a couple other things, but I think this was really what put him on the map, although obviously he would become more notable later in life.
Well, yeah.
But you look at Joe Rogan playing handyman Joe Gorelli. You got Dave Foley playing a character named Dave. Phil Hartman, Stephen Root, Maura Tierney, Andy Dick. Say what you will about him, but he does have some comedic chops. Did that bode well for you, Andrew, when you saw all those faces?
Yeah, it did. Lead guy Dave, I know him as one of those that guy actors. Oh, it's that guy, and he's always like a funny character in whatever he's in, so I was happy to see him. And then, of course, Phil Hartman. He was perfect to be a news guy. And just a funny dude, it's Troy McClure in the flesh.
John, what was the funniest line for you?
I think it was when Bill was describing smoking.
I can't quit. It's too hard.
Look, I know it's hard.
You can't know. How can you know? I'll bet you've never smoked a single cigarette in your life.
Well, yeah, I did once.
And you threw up.
How'd you know?
You seem like the type.
Well, okay, look, so I don't smoke, but you know what? I am addicted to caffeine.
You got a coffee problem, huh?
Yeah.
How bad is your habit?
2-3 pots a day. 4 on a Monday.
Well, that's just sick.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've tried to quit, but I can't even cut down.
Oh, it's not the same. These guys are my little friends. They're always there when I need them, my reliable little buddies.
Hey, Bill, I'm your friend.
Yeah? Where were you last night around 3 a.m. when I was watching Steel Magnolias and crying my eyes out?
Connect with the Screen Companion via our Facebook group, by subscribing on YouTube or whatever platform you're listening on, and email us using thescreencompanion@gmail.com. So I think this was the third episode aired of the series. Did you notice that even this early on, the characters seem so well-defined? All the comedy springs from their personalities. Bill just thinking he can pay the fine and keep smoking.
I think it worked really well. It was great how fast this show got its stride.
Andrew, was there any joke that you didn't get or like?
Not in particular, no. It was a show that I had heard of before, but I didn't know anything about it. I went into this episode thinking, okay, like, what am I going to get out of this? Am I going to find a comfy new show to binge? And I can see News Radio being one.
I was going to ask what you guys think the best comedy performance of the episode is, but can we just all agree it's Phil Hartman?
Yes.
The format for this episode is two episodes each show, and the first episode is a funny episode, and the second episode, the second example, is more of a heartfelt episode. Going into Sleeping from the third season, John, what's that about?
That's when Stephen Root's character has a heart attack and everyone has to think about his mortality and their own mortality.
But they do it in a very News Radio fashion, because at its heart, it's very absurd.
Yeah.
Did anybody actually tear up in the episode?
No, I don't think anyone teared up. By the end of it, I don't know if they cared whether he lived or died, because they all went through their own shit with themselves.
I know, but I also think that out of the three shows today, those characters in News Radio might be the most self-absorbed out of the three.
Yeah, that's a fair thing, because to deal with it, Bill went back to basically being a college DJ and playing songs for Stephen Root.
But that's also an example of seeing Bill's sweeter side, which we didn't always get.
Especially in the smoking episode, where he was on edge the whole time.
And if you notice, there was no Beth the assistant this episode. The writer said they felt there was one too many characters, and this cast had 8 actors. So, did you miss Beth?
No, I don't think I did. I don't think I noticed. No offense to Beth. Sorry, Beth.
And if you were going to eliminate one of the regulars, who would it be?
I guess Beth works. I don't know what Joe Rogan brought to the episode. He was still funny. Andy Dick was the cause of the whole thing, so...
Well, I guess I'm talking more series-wide, not just these episodes. Well, it's telling that the actress that played Catherine, she left in the fourth season. Candy Alexander.
I think she only had like one or two scenes in the smoking episode.
At least let the man smoke while he's on the air, Dave.
Catherine, I can't do that.
I don't mind, really. I used to smoke myself, and quite honestly, I miss the smell.
She was a good character, and she was a good foil for Bill, but they just didn't use her a lot, and I think part of that is because you have these strong comedic voices in Dave Foley, Phil Hartman, Andy Dick, Stephen Root, that the air gets sucked out of the room really fast.
There's some very overpowering comedic talents.
I'll throw you a curveball and say I'd merge Beth with Matthew. Even the writers admitted they didn't know what Matthew's job was. So I'd keep the weirdness of Matthew, but as Dave's secretary.
It felt like he was the 80s throwback character of, I'm the wacky guy, but I don't have a role.
The wacky nerd.
Yeah. The smoking episode started with what sounded like a news story, but really he was just recapping a dream he had.
Yeah. Look at a lot of these characters and things they do in the newsroom. They addressed it in the third season. A guy like that would get fired.
Dave, you should probably try cauliflower. It's good for caffeine addiction.
What is with you in that?
Well, there's a vegetable for every addiction.
Yeah? What are you addicted to?
Vegetable.
I like Beth, but her character amounts to quirky bohemian chick. Andy Dick can fill that comedy space.
I'll say, I think Beth might have been a demographic hire, possibly. My brother would watch the show with me because he had huge crush on her.
Oh, all the ladies, they're actresses, and in some ways their characters, I think, were attractive.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I was a Lisa guy. Maura Tierney looks so great.
I'll agree with that. I will step up as a Tierney guy.
And her character, Lisa Miller, I like how she's shown to be super smart, but also super neurotic, so she's not as overly confident as some characters can get.
No, I'm sorry, I haven't come up with a decision yet.
That's okay. It's okay, really. I mean, I think that the main reason this whole baby thing came up all of a sudden is just because of Jimmy and everything.
Yeah, I know, this has been a traumatic time. I don't think anyone's thinking that clearly.
Oh, no, I'm thinking more clearly than ever.
Meaning?
Meaning, I want to have a baby immediately.
And I want to get married at an unspecified time in the near future.
Andrew, what do you think of the sitcom formula where all regular characters appear in nearly all episodes?
I like it. It's familiar. You get to know them better. You get to know their quirks and their antics. Especially if you like a character a lot. Seeing them more and more is usually a treat, except for the instances where they inundate the character. They make the show about them when they were just supposed to be a supporting or side character.
I agree that it's nice to have that consistency with everybody showing up every episode, but I think the ratio should be something like 18 episodes where everybody's involved, and maybe 6 where it's only half the cast, or even just 2 of the regular stars. Because when there are less characters, it's more lines for the others, and it can spotlight dynamics between actors that can get diluted when it's a group of folks talking around a table compared to a pair working out an episode-long dilemma. What do you think, John?
It's like you said with Beth earlier, the writers don't know what to do with the characters sometimes. You see it with The Simpsons, where the episode still needs to be about somebody. You have this whole cast, and if you don't know what to do with the character and you're trying to make the episode about that character, it's not going to be a good episode.
This obligation that it feels like the writers have sometimes, where I wish I could think of a specific example, but when in a live-action sitcom, everybody's got something, but then one actor literally comes in for like one line the whole episode, and you go, huh, that felt a little forced, just so he could appear. I think all these episodes had credit scenes. You guys all watched to the very, very end, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I knew I could count on you guys. You guys are so swell. I'm glad you guys are guests today. It's just a love fest.
Glad we're here. Thanks for having us.
But Andrew, what do you think about Jimmy James's heart attack-induced coma? Did you get any heartfelt vibes from it, or did you feel it was more like just there to be the backdrop for the episode?
This being the second episode of News Radio I watched, I don't know if he has a bad heart in general, but it did seem like kind of like the backdrop just for the episode, to give all the characters their little heartfelt moment with him. Not like it was a forced drama, so to speak. Because I don't know if this was the first episode where that particular character was spotlighted for heartfelt stuff.
Well, it's a very silly show. More than Frasier or Wings. I don't think the drama would jive as well with the show.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Not that they didn't have some heartfelt moments on News Radio, but if you're going to deal with a medical issue, this one out of the three is not going to give it its proper dramatic weight.
It's like you said earlier about all the characters being more selfish about the situation. They just used an unconscious Jimmy to work through their own stuff. I think the subplot of Lisa wanting a baby and Dave wanting to get married and them going through that and Bill reverting back to his college self.
They didn't mind the drama as much as they could have. Nobody was treating Jimmy's coma like he was actually going to bite it. But I like that the situation, they're dealing with their own stuff by staying with Jimmy around the clock in the break room.
This isn't his only business. He's a billionaire. Why are they bringing him to the break room of this news station?
But I like the situation because it showed that these guys do ultimately care. So much of the show is them bickering. It's nice to be reminded that they're tight-knit co-workers. Andrew, from these two episodes, what do you think is News Radio's biggest strength, and what concerns would you have if you decided to watch more?
I would say that the biggest strength would be, I don't want to say Phil Hartman's character, but I mean, it kind of is. Every time he was on the screen, he has really good lines. And I think my biggest worry about it would be it getting old fast. Stale, maybe. I feel like workplace-specific comedies, how many situations could you have?
You could have a lot if it's not really about the work.
That's true.
They were never about the work.
This show got really weird. They would have episodes that were fantasy episodes. Like one episode, they were on the Titanic. Another episode, the news station doubled as a space station, and it was the far-flung future.
That episode was so weird.
Which is why they saved it for the end of the season. Because you don't want to open a season with that, because any new viewer is going to be wondering, what the hell's happening? Why is Dave Nelson on the Titanic right now?
Sweeps weeks. I gotta save that for sweeps.
We interrupt this season finale for a special news bulletin. The fifth season of The Screen Companion begins September 1st, 2024. Having trouble waiting months for its return? Watch out for a special Doctor Who retrospective, re-examining all of Christopher Eccleston's episodes as the Doctor. But warning to casual listeners and enjoyers of pop culture, we're going to get real geeky. The Doctor Who Series 1 show will help fill the gap, releasing everywhere The Screen Companion does on May 1st. Now, back to the show. Moving on to Frasier. Andrew, tell us what the basic premise is.
Dr. Frasier Crane is a psychiatrist who has a radio show and lives in his apartment with his father that in season one doesn't really quite get along with.
Both episodes you picked are from the first third of Frasier's run. How would you characterize the evolution of the show across 11 seasons? And do you, in fact, like the earlier seasons more?
If you want the pinnacle, I would probably tell you it's the first five. And then 6 and 7 and 8 are still pretty solid. 9 and 10, it becomes very much more hit or miss. And then season 11, they kind of get back on the right track, but not 100%. This is definitely one of those sitcoms. It ran a little too long for its own good.
And was it appointment viewing for you?
This was a show that I would catch on TV sometimes, like just a few years ago. It'd be late at night and I might put it on or something. And, you know, I would laugh because I thought it was funny. And then one day my mom saw me watching it and she's like, oh, I think you should watch the whole series. I think you'd really like it. And then I acquired the whole series online. And
edit that out.
For our one FBI listener, I acquired the series online.
Totally legit.
I binged 11 seasons of Frasier probably within like a month, if even that. I was watching it a lot. It was just really good. And then when you binge a show like that, I feel like you can tell the drops in the quality a little bit more because you're just watching. Or maybe I just burned myself out. Maybe seasons 9 and 10 are the best ones, and I'm just wrong.
When it was in its first run, John, Did you watch it across its whole run?
I did, yeah. I think towards the end, Friends had started, so it became like, ah, fuck that show, watch Frasier.
Do you think there was a quality drop-off in the very later years?
Yeah, towards the end, it felt like it was just routine for everybody, like viewers and the writers and the actors.
And do you have any special viewing memories of the show?
I feel like every time, watching my mom laugh at the show, because she hated sophisticated people. And so every time she'd laugh at them being idiots, it felt like a win somewhere in the universe.
Well, the first episode of Frasier we're going to talk about is from season 3, called High Crane Drifter. Andrew, what's it about?
It opens with Frasier just being inconvenienced and taxed by the rudeness of the citizens of Seattle until he has an altercation with a rude customer at his coffee place that he goes to just about every episode with Niles, and he throws this guy out. People are happy that he did it, but he's not, and then hilarity ensues.
First thing I gotta mention up top, what's up with the rude video store clerk trope? Wings also has an episode. In the series, there's an episode that features a jerk clerk. I don't remember them being assholes. The stereotype I'd throw at that extinct breed would be closer to aloof or snobby about movies, but not necessarily rude service. John, do you recall rental store clerks being especially impolite, like Randall from the Kevin Smith movies?
No, but I'm going to preface this with, I grew up in a small town, so everybody knew the guy. Plus, if you weren't renting porn, he was probably very happy with the situation.
Why wouldn't he be happy at just people renting stuff, porn or no porn?
Well, you know, taking the porn out's perfectly fine. It's when they bring it back an hour later and it's weird.
Ew. How do you know this?
It's a Marc Maron joke. I'd like to give him credit. It's a very funny Marc Maron joke.
Oh, okay. I thought you were giving us insight into how long it took you to spank your meat.
Yeah.
No. I don't think I was old enough to rent porn before video stores just went extinct.
Man, that mysterious black curtain.
Oh, yeah. And it was right next to, the way our local video store was set up, it was right next to all the Godzilla movies. So I always spent a suspicious amount of time next to the curtain.
Oh my god, that's why you like Godzilla so much. It has nothing to do with that series. It's the fact that it was right next to the porn section.
Big Lizard's last step before titties.
I think it was 17 is when you could go back there, or maybe 18, but whatever the year, and video stores were still around. I went in there, and I felt gross.
It's weird.
It was like, it was supposed to be a big moment, and then I finally saw what was back there. By this point, I knew what was back there, but to actually go where you're not supposed to go, it's like a VIP section or something. And then it's just, look at these grody VHS covers. I don't want it. I gotta get out of here. I lived in a small enough city that I didn't need anybody recognizing me there. Andrew, what's your favorite moment from this episode?
Oh, gosh. Because this is one of my favorite episodes of Frasier. My favorite moment is when Niles is taunting the rude man at the end.
So then you accept my apology? Now I'm suing you. And I got a lot of witnesses that just heard you admit you were wrong.
But these are stressful times we live in. I'd reached the end of my tether.
Tough. I'm nailing you for assault.
But I hardly touched you!
Oh, Frasier, you're not surprised he's hiding behind lawyers. What other behavior would you expect from a chicken?
What did you say?
I was speaking to my brother, but to put it in language you can understand...
Niles! This is no time for you to assert yourself.
Your brother's making trouble here.
Ooh, what are you gonna do? Flap me with one of your big fluffy wings?
If you can try to remember the first time you watched the episode, Did you instantly understand what Niles was doing, or was it a surprise that it was the whole countersuit angle?
I didn't think it was the countersuit angle until he got poked and he started acting like that. And I was like, okay, he's just being ridiculous. Now I know what he's doing. First, he's just standing up to this bully. That was his thing for this whole episode, is just he never stood up. So I'm like, okay, he's just finally doing it. And then when, you know, when it happened, it's like, he's being a real good brother right now.
Because I'm totally new to the show. From these episodes, a character trait of Niles, I think, is that he is a pushover. But he's not a loser in the way that Antonio Scarpacci is in Wings. Am I wrong in that, Andrew, as far as, yes, he's a pushover, but it's not supposed to be that he's a really unfortunate guy in the humor?
Yeah, I think that's right, because there are a few times in the series where he gets pushed around a lot, but every once in a while he hits a moment where he does what needs to be done. It's in extreme situations you'll see Niles rise to the challenge.
What's Niles' job?
He's also a psychiatrist.
Oh. But like private practice?
Yeah, he's private practice, yeah.
You don't have to be so disappointed by that answer, Frank.
Well, he does come off as a younger version of Frasier, and that doesn't really help that assessment.
He is a younger version of Frasier.
Like, honestly, if you watch the show, it'll make perfect sense. You'll get it.
Find out later, spoiler alert, they're named after rats.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment in this episode, John?
So it's that same scene at the end, and this is just my favorite type of comedy in general, where the punchline is a matter of a fact thing. It's not them trying to be funny. Frasier compliments Niles on his pain acting.
I'll stop it! Please excuse him!
Oh, for God's sake, Frasier, don't waste your breath on this hairy, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing troglodyte who's probably the only male in existence who suffers from penis envy! You look here, buddy.
Oh. Niles, are you all right?
Countersuit.
Oh, my God. Nobody move him.
I barely touched him.
Then you admit you touched him.
He admits it.
Oh.
Oh, Niles. Niles, I'm here for you. I promise we're going to get you the best care that this man's money can buy.
My God, Niles, that was brilliant. You even got a tear in your eye.
I landed on a fork.
And were there any jokes for you, John, this episode that belly flopped?
There's always, every Frasier episode has a whimsical quip about some famous therapist that no one's ever heard of.
Oh my God, that's it, John. That's what I was going to mention.
Yeah. And it's always like, oh, that's very Nietzsche of you. Like, I don't understand that.
Maybe there are multiple instances of this in the episode, and we're actually talking about two different things, but hear me out. When Frasier's manhandling that rude guy, gets in the newspaper, and they talk about him having a catchphrase, what you need is an etiquette lesson. And Niles says, perfect for you, Frasier. Dirty Harry meets Emily Post. I didn't know who Emily Post was. Now, since you're the smartest guy on this call, Andrew, did you know who she was?
I'm 99% sure she's an author.
Well, yeah, but what kind of author?
A lady author? When I think of Emily Post, I think of manners and etiquette. I don't think she was like a Jane Eyre author. I don't want to say a Dear Abby, but something like that.
Exactly. Okay, the context clue is there. It makes sense for the joke. I remember before we did this episode for these sitcoms, I said that one of my reservations was that Frasier always came off as highbrow, over-your-head type of humor. And Andrew assured me that that wasn't really the case. But this is a perfect example of it. Who the hell is Emily Post?
The main comedy comes from laughing at them being hoity-toity.
When they're sipping wine, and they make a face or something, and they're like, oh, it's nothing like the 57, and then they make their stupid faces, and then the laugh track plays. I know it's not because I'm supposed to know what a Bollinger 57 tastes like. It's them. I'm laughing at them for being silly about it.
Going back to John saying that his mom would laugh at those upper crust people, it's also self-effacing, and I'm right there with your mother. It's like, okay, so we're laughing at them making these references and being out of touch, but at the same time, it clearly shows that these characters are smarter than I am, in as much as they make these references. I don't know who Emily Post is, and they do, so I'm kind of saying I'm stupid.
They have more knowledge, but still breaks down to, like, the pretending to get hurt for the countersuit. They still act like idiots, right? They still act as petty and dumb as everybody else, and that's the joke. They're supposed to be superior, and then every episode breaks down to them being another idiot.
Yeah, they don't have social intelligence.
There's like an entire episode where Frasier is tired of being pranked by a coworker, and that's when he learns that he just doesn't have a sense of humor or the ability to prank. It's something that's beyond him because he was just always buried in the books, you know? Us as the average Joe can look down on them because they don't get these simple things.
Are Frasier and Niles, out of these three shows, are they the most tragic with their backstory? When I look at news radio, Bill McNeil has a really messed up background, but it's not as terrible because he doesn't see it as depressing.
He's always making jokes about how I think his mother was abusive. He doesn't understand when other people aren't laughing along with him.
Exactly. And then in Wings, that's just so damn wholesome. I think the worst thing in any of their backstories is that Helen Chapel grew up with a weight problem.
The father of the two brothers in Wings was clinically insane.
Oh, right. Yeah, he was institutionalized at a certain point.
Because there's a whole episode dedicated to them thinking he left behind a treasure map, and the reality was he left behind like a million keys.
Yeah. And the mother left. So I guess they do have some drama, but now compare that to Frasier, and just from the two episodes I watched, it sets up that Frasier and Niles, they're so detached from normal human interaction, and then on top of that, that their mother named them after rats. That feels pretty depressing to me.
It was just so funny, though.
Yeah.
In the episode, Are You Being Served? Andrew, this is the heartfelt example. What's it about?
Throughout the series up to this point, Niles, whenever he talks about his marriage with Maris, it's usually making fun of her because of how weird she is, or he's just constantly being put down and bossed around by her, and he's finally served divorce papers. He suggested counseling, and so she was just like, screw that, and filed for divorce, and this is him dealing with that.
Do we ever see Maris on screen in the series?
No, you don't.
Do we even hear her voice?
No.
Yeah. John, do you have a funniest moment or line?
The whole episode is just still in my head, and so I can't narrow it down.
Well, in that case, Andrew, can you be more specific?
It is hard one, because like, this episode's really good. I think my favorite moment is when they realized it's shortly after they found out that they were named after the rats.
It's only natural to feel a little bit shaky, but believe me, you made the right decision.
How do I know that?
Let's just check what prompted us to it. Here. Niles is incapable of asserting himself, especially in front of females.
Keep going, this is helping.
As I write this, he lies, staring out the window, licking himself. He's become so subservient lately that when he finishes grooming himself, he often begins licking Frasier.
I have no memory of that.
April 14th, the day I've dreaded for weeks, Frasier died this morning. I never would have guessed that my heart could ache so over the death of my beloved,
lab rat. My only consolation is the knowledge that I will soon give birth to my first child.
Do you know what this means?
My mother named us after rodents.
No, it means I have ended my marriage to the woman I love based on the case history of a spineless rat.
Yes.
Oh, my God, Maris has seen the papers. It's too late to take it back.
Your reasoning was still sound.
My reasoning? My reasoning was based on my mother's obsession with vermin!
You have to watch. It's one of those things where it's like, it's beautifully acted. That's why Niles is my favorite character in this show. He's funny. If Frasier's not close to being an everyman, then Niles is even further removed. I tend to like those kinds of characters in my shows the most. I don't know why I gravitate towards them. I think just because of how outlandish they are, the way they see the world. Like, in MASH, my favorite character is Charles Emerson Winchester III. I just gravitate towards those characters.
It's hard to say no to Niles. He's amazing. He's still got all that character development, and he still, as not Frasier, he still gets to be the side quippy guy. It's the news radio where they cut all the side characters and give it to one of the main characters. The walking in with the one line.
Out of all of us, you have familiarity with all three shows. Just from the two I watched of Frasier, tell me if I'm wrong. It felt like Wings and News Radio are much more ensembles, whereas Frasier really feels like it's Frasier and Niles. And the other characters, yeah, they add something. They're supporting cast, but that they're supporting Niles and Frasier, and the interest and the funny whatever doesn't spread out among all the cast like the other two shows. What do you think?
That's an accurate statement. At the end of the day, it's still a spinoff. So everyone's there to support the only character from Cheers that I guess everyone wanted to see. Everyone was clamoring for Frasier from Cheers.
Andrew, I'm actually a little surprised you thought of Are You Being Served as a heartfelt example of the series. What do you point to as moments that strike a chord emotionally that are less about the funny and more about the feeling?
When they're in Niles' home trying to get the groveling letter that Niles wrote to Maris, especially after they were trapped in there waiting for those sleeping pills to work on the dogs, when he's just looking around and, you know, when he says that this is the room's a monument to my spinelessness, and he's just able to point everything out that he had to buy as an apology. That's a heartfelt moment for me, where Frasier's there to support Niles, and it's one of the rare instances where Niles is standing up for himself and doing what he knows he has to do for his own sake.
Getting those divorce papers, it's just a classic dramatic setup, and I thought, ooh, we're going to really mine that. It never felt like it hit a crescendo. There's some self-reflection and melancholy, but it's completely undone by the end of the episode. I thought there was a missed opportunity for real feeling.
I guess if you continue the series, like the very next episode, maybe that would have been a more heartfelt example. But the Niles Maris thing, that's a whole multi-season ups and downs type of thing.
It was a big tease, right? They'd always tease it, because the other tease was that Niles was in love with Daphne, secretly.
The maid.
Yes.
She's a physical therapist who essentially does all their housework.
Something that let me down specifically in this episode, Frasier's discomfiture regarding hugs. It was obviously a setup for something, and it did pay off as a big gag at the end. But I think it would have been more useful as something dramatic. Like when Niles is freaking out about signing the divorce papers, he's hyperventilating. Oh my God, what did I do? How much better would it have been for Frasier, who's up to this point in the episode, he's been awkwardly practicing hugs. And I love it when he tries to hug Niles and he just starts haphazardly squeezing his shoulders. He just doesn't know, like, what's a hug? I guess I'll just squeeze your arms. Okay, Niles is freaking out. And then Frasier comes in, and the whole time he's been having trouble approximating a hug, but then he gives his younger brother a genuine, effortless hug in that moment and tells him things are going to be okay, and it calms Niles down. Maybe Niles weeps a little into Frasier's shoulder. I'm not expecting it to go full soap opera, but at least give me a satisfying beat that would have been a sprinkle of salt on my chocolate and humanized characters that I had a terrible time relating to.
Damn.
The whole Frasier anti-hug thing, I don't think it was ever brought up again in the series. I don't think it was brought up before. It was just his setup just for like some antics. Because it's not like something he actually works through for the rest of the show, like Niles standing up for himself.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of resetting in sitcoms. How that detail could have really fit into this episode and what Niles was going through would have been a nice emotional payoff.
I agree. It would have been a nice emotional payoff, but there's more examples throughout the series. It's the same joke. The spirit's the same, but the form takes different. I think there's an episode where they're sending around a get well soon card, and Frasier, being impersonable, doesn't pay attention and thinks it's a birthday card, and signs it, "You're not getting older, you're one day closer to death," but the guy's in the hospital for a serious issue. And it becomes a whole thing of him trying to replace the card. There's multiple examples throughout the series of him being like that, and the hug is just another example that never comes up again. But you're right, there's a lot of sitcom resets and a lot of out-of-character things that the writers will do to make the episode more funny as a sub-story.
Depending on how much of that they do, I'll forgive it if it works really well in that 22 minutes. So for Frasier, John, what's your pitch for folks to check it out?
If you enjoy people who are supposed to be better than you being worse than you, check out Frasier.
That's a really good log line. I could see you pitching that to executives.
Let's take a moment to thank TSC fans from around the world. Tell us which of our recommendations you liked and who your favorite guests are via the screencompanion at gmail.com. Further support the host by purchasing a digital or print copy of his sci-fi novel, Traversal, The Weight of Worlds, available on Amazon.
The final show we discuss today is Wings, which follows the Hackett brothers running a single-plane operation in their hometown, the island of Nantucket, Mass. John, was Wing something you watched alone or with family?
Alone. It was on USA. I want to say they would just show it all day, and I'd watch it on summer vacation.
Oh my God, John. This is how television connects people, because I was going to say the exact same thing.
All right.
And also, we're in the same time zone, the East Coast.
Yeah.
So, the same time you're home alone watching it, I'm home alone, spread out on the couch, playing with some toys. This was probably late elementary school for me, so I think you might have been in middle school. I was watching, marathons of it on USA Network. I caught a few episodes originally on NBC, but most of my viewing was reruns like you.
Mm-hmm.
So in the season 6 episode, is that a 10-foot sandwich, or are you just glad to see me? Which is a very long episode title. Brian and Casey set up an engagement party for Joe and Helen and pretend to have an affair in order to keep the party a surprise, including the titular Big Sandwich to nosh on. Before we get into anything else, I need to know, John, as a caterer, what are your thoughts on serving a Big Sandwich? What meat combos are popular, and what events go hand in hand with a Big Sandwich?
Ironically, bar mitzvahs love 10-foot foods. I haven't made because I'm not a kosher chef, but I've cut up a 10-foot challah for multiple bar mitzvahs.
And do they all gather around you as you cut the tip off?
Ironically, no. Only one guy with funny sideburns shows up and criticizes me.
What meats are popular?
It's usually turkey.
Was it only Jewish events that you did?
Jewish events are the only time I've done 10-foot foods. And so those are going to be like turkey with like a jam. Obviously, you can't do ham at those events.
What bread?
It's San Francisco, so we're doing Dutch Crunch out here.
I have no idea what that is.
You should look it up. It's delicious. Also known as tiger bread.
Interesting. Being brand new to the show, Andrew, what were your opening impressions?
The guy who plays Brian Hackett looked really familiar because he was one of the bad guys in the show iZombie, which I watched. That was my initial impression. And then I was also a little disappointed. I don't think the band Wings played the theme song.
No, that would have been expensive.
At the time, there was also another show on, I think, Discovery Channel, back when they actually did science, called Wings, and it was about military planes.
I vaguely remember that.
There's also a movie from the 20s called Wings. Well, this doesn't bode well for your thoughts on the rest of the show, Andrew, considering all you could think about was how somebody looked like they might have been on another show.
Well, it turns out I was right. He was.
He was in one of the Broadway runs of The Producers, too. Frank, I know you love The Producers.
What now? What are you talking about?
Oh, and it was interesting to see Sandman in this.
Oh, yeah, Thomas Hayden Church. I love the LOL.
Again, you're talking about a lot of other properties, but not really talking about the show. John, do you have a favorite joke from this episode?
It's just the constant every time they bring up, we're throwing a party. Oh, how big's the sandwich going to be? The sister Casey get upset, like, it's supposed to be fancy. And they all have to sit it like, look, this is Nantucket. We're getting a 10-foot sandwich.
Give you a little background, Andrew. Casey was a highfalutin San Francisco socialite before she crashed and burned and had to move in with her sister Helen. Part of that string of jokes.
We are throwing a surprise engagement party for Joe and Helen, and you're all invited.
It's at the Harbor House tonight. We'll meet you in the lobby at 7:30.
Well, it's a little last minute, but it's a party, and who might have passed up a big sandwich? How many feet you go for? 8 feet? Ah, this is Joe and Helen. It's got to be the 10-footer.
Remember that 12-footer they served at Ed Peterson's wake?
Oh, yeah.
Brace yourself, guys. We're not having a big sandwich.
Excuse me. It almost sounded like you said there would be no big sandwich.
Oh, everyone loves the big sandwich.
A party without a big sandwich? It's just not dumb.
All right, enough about the big sandwich. I'm sure you will all be more than pleased with the food, especially after you've tasted the marvelous poached salmon.
How many feet did you get?
That did make me laugh. The sandwich stuff was pretty funny. And when they were carrying the sandwich to the hotel room, and Roy said, like, if anything happens to the roast beef section of this sandwich, I swear. Because that would be the part of the sandwich I would want to eat.
Do you have a least favorite gag in this episode?
When I think of the least favorite gag in a sitcom, it's usually like a joke that makes me groan or like, ooh. If anything, it was when Sandman was telling Roy the long-winded story about how he got the mug back.
Roy,
Where's that mug I gave you?
Geez. You know, I haven't seen that around. Somebody must have swiped it. Oh, I'm all broken up.
Well, dry your eyes, Roy Biggins. Today's your lucky day. Okay, wait till you hear this story. All right, remember my friend Merle? Well, he went out cod fishing the other day and he reeled in a 50-pounder. He gets it back to the beach, cuts that baby open. What do you think falls out?
The mug?
No, a license plate from 1929. So he takes it home, he tells his wife about it, she doesn't believe him. They have a huge fight, Merle storms out, he's walking down the beach. Guess what he tripped over?
The mug?
Big old piece of driftwood. Falls
down, gashes his head, he has to go to the hospital, get 30 stitches, his wife comes to comfort him, yeah. Hey, what do you think she brings him? No, flowers.
Mather, where the hell'd you find the mug?
Oh, I saw your pilot Bob getting on a flight with, and I said, hey, wait a second, Bob, that's Roy's mug. But isn't that something about Merle?
I knew the ending of the story, how he got the mug, was not related at all to what he was telling. So I think it was just kind of like seeing the setup.
For the listeners, stop mixing universes, Andrew. Sandman, played by Thomas Hayden Church, who plays Lowell the Mechanic on Wings.
Lowell the Mechanic, yes.
I'm fine with Sandman, because in one of the cartoon iterations, Steven Weber played Norman Osborn, Green Goblin. And I want to give him a shout-out as doing a really good job. So we could totally make this a comic book thing.
Steven Weber, he plays Brian, the younger brother. I could have done without the on-the-nose visual gags involving Casey ignoring Antonio. Like when he says she wouldn't notice him if he was on fire.
Oh, dude.
And then he catches fire holding a cigarette and she walks right by him. You see it a mile away, and such a visual gag like that just didn't feel very clever.
Because they never at any point get together as a couple, right? And isn't the whole point of sitcom gags like that is that eventually those two types of characters get together?
Well, they do acknowledge it on occasion, but no, they never got together. And if they did a revival, John, would you mind if it turns out Antonio and Casey got together?
Actually, I think I would mind. Brian and Casey. I know in later seasons those two got together.
Yeah, they got together, but they never became an official couple. And in the very last episode of the series, they were going to stay behind and run the business while Joe and Helen took some time to travel Europe. So they're friends, they're co-workers, but at the very end of the show, they're not officially a couple.
Just fucking?
No, I don't think they were having a big sandwich together.
Now, that is a great metaphor. Hey, but you want to go back to my place and have a big sandwich?
We move ahead to the season 7 episode, When a Man Loves a Donut, which coincidentally has a lot of connective tissue to 10-foot sandwich. You got the food, Brian and Casey's low-key attraction to one another, Joe and Helen. They were engaged in the other episode, now they're married. And Brian even complained in 10-foot sandwich that the brothers don't hang out as much since Helen entered the picture. When a Man Loves a Donut finds Brian struggling with overeating as he feels left out of his brother's life ever since Joe got married to Helen. They were likened to the Three Musketeers in early seasons, but now Brian is the insecure third wheel. John, your favorite scene or joke?
When Antonio is cursing his new shoes.
Antonio, what on earth is the matter?
What do you think is the matter? My feet are on fire. These freaking shoes are... Who made my feet swell so much? I haven't been able to take the shoes off for 2 days.
Well, you know, they say that fine leather has to stretch and conform.
Lies! Lies. I have a splitting headache. Double vision. Got this little blue line running up my leg.
Well, that can't be good. Oh, it's a shame. They're so stylish. They really make you look sexy.
Sexy? Really? Maybe I'll give them a couple more days.
And Casey, the B story, is she's going in for an interview for the tourism board on Nantucket. So she wants to go out, get a better feel of the island. And Antonio thought he was going to drive her around. And she's like, no, you get a much better feel of things if you walk. They did a surprising amount of dramatic moments on the show overall, and every cast member got multiple occasions to shine each season, even Lowell. Steven Weber, as Brian, played the vulnerability perfectly, believably, and it was poignant to have the normally confident, rakish Brian deal with feeling left out and alone when he loses it at the Eataholics meeting while he's speaking to the group, and he goes, "Save your sympathy for someone who needs it. I'm doing great." And he beats his chest for emphasis.
I don't have anything to say. I don't belong here. I'm not an Eataholic. The only reason I came here is because Helen made me. I mean, you're all here for a reason. Obviously, something happened in your lives, and instead of facing up to it, you ate a sheet cake.
Well, thank you, Brian. And
I mean, what do you want me to say? What do you want me to say? My life is terrific. It's terrific. I got a cool job. I'm working with my brother, who, by the way, happens to be the one that married Helen. Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. Okay, so Joe and I don't hang out as much as we used to. All right. Okay. Oh, and okay, so we don't watch All Night Stooges the way we used to. And okay, so Joe didn't come with me to the Mud Bowl this year. He's a married man. What do you expect? Life goes on. You deal with it.
Exactly. And thank you.
We don't know what you're thinking. Let me just set the record straight. You're wrong. I don't feel left out. I don't feel rejected. I don't feel alone. I'm Brian Hackett. And I don't need anyone. I fly solo. Soup for one. By myself. And loving it. So, save your sympathy for somebody who needs it. I'm doing great. See? Told you I had nothing to say.
I felt for him. It was less about the comedy in that beat and more about the drama. Did it work for you, Andrew?
It did. It was a good scene.
There were two pseudo-heavy scenes. That one, the Eataholics meltdown, and when Joe and Brian have a heart-to-heart. John, which scene was more impactful for you on a dramatic level?
I'm going to go with the Eataholics scene, because a lot of sitcoms use the heart-to-heart as their solution to their stories. It's a necessary and real thing, but it's just every sitcom uses it. So, yeah, I'm going to go with the Eataholics scene.
And what was interesting is that the weight problem is used for a lot of jokes early on. Everybody's making fun of Brian. We're laughing at him. We're complicit. But then when he goes nuts at the Eataholics meeting and you really see what's going on behind the scenes of his weight gain, for a second, I'm like, ah, damn, I feel bad now about laughing at his weight.
As a guy who used to watch My 600-Pound Life a lot, not a problem for me. Also knowing, like, every person on that show has some severe trauma as to why they started overeating, so it was kind of like, oh, okay, he's doing this for a reason.
Well, I think that's true to life, isn't it? When you go from one lifestyle and then you drastically change physically, there's usually a trigger for that. I catch a few episodes of this show on an annual basis, and with its working-class cast and New England backdrop, every time I revisit it, it gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling. I agree with what the cast and crew have said about the show, that it was never avant-garde, but I say who cares? The characters are likable and it made me laugh. As we talk about sitcoms in general, Andrew, what do you think is there to miss about 90s sitcoms versus stuff from the last 5 or 10 years, comedy-wise?
The comfiness of it, if that makes sense. And it seems like there's a difference in timing and in delivery and even the acting when you look at the multicam sitcoms versus what we all have now, which is like the single-camera comedies like... As much as I love Scrubs, you know, use that as an example on stuff like The Office and Modern Family. There's a warm and fuzzy feeling, I think, that you mentioned, Frank, that you miss. I miss that with older sitcoms. There's just something familiar about them. Old friends.
Well, you say that, but how much of it do you think is nostalgia? For you, Frasier specifically, you said you watched it years after its original run, so nostalgia played nothing into it for you, right?
The most nostalgia I had for it was I knew my mom watched it in its original run, but I don't even think she watched it consistently. So it was a show I knew that she liked, and then she recommended that I watched it. I liked it for the humor and the characters. If I get nostalgic with a sitcom, it would be something like Home Improvement, because I remember watching that as a kid. But like most sitcoms that I've watched, I actually have picked up later in life. Just binging.
I was looking up the 2023 network TV schedule, because I don't watch anything new. And I think the premise of this show I found on the CW encapsulates the underlying problem with most modern comedies. The British import, Everyone Else Burns, concerns a family in a puritanical sect that believes in the end times. If I didn't tell you it was a comedy, that doesn't sound very funny to me.
No.
No, I was just going to make a joke about, like, oh, that's a terrible sitcom, but now you're telling me it is, in fact, a sitcom.
It's high concept. Sounds like, since you know it is a comedy, it sounds darkly funny. I haven't seen it. I can't make any value judgments. But gone are the days when shows can have a mundane premise, like brothers running a charter business or a guy with a radio show. And in today's oversaturated media landscape, you probably need a big setup to stand out from the pack, but you lose the ease of identifying with Roommates Living in New York, even though I hated that show, or Friends spending a lot of time in a diner. I don't think a super religious family is going to be instantly relatable to most viewers. Again, not that the show is bad, I haven't seen it, but older stuff endures because it's comfort food, it's instantly accessible.
Now it's streaming. You know, we didn't have streaming back then. We barely had internet. With the streaming now, the whole point is to watch 10 episodes in a row. Whereas then it was just like, we got to get people on a schedule. We got to keep them coming back. That's how I watched Frasier. It was just like, okay, it's Tuesday night. It's time to watch Frasier.
And it's funny that things back then, it's on a weekly basis. You can't binge. And I think on paper, that makes sense, because sitcoms are very formulaic, and if you really look at it, they repeat a lot of stuff and just turn it in a slightly different way. That sounds like it wouldn't work to binge those things, and yet, if you dare me, I'll watch Wings from start to finish, which is weird because it is formulaic, but then, not to keep dumping on Everyone Else Burns, but that doesn't sound like a show that I'm going to want to binge.
Yeah.
That premise doesn't make me feel good. Now the final segment of the show, TLDL, Too Long Didn't Listen. I'm going to ask you guys some questions. Please give me some short, sweet answers. Andrew, going by what we watched, which cast was the best ensemble?
Frasier.
John, which show was the best based on the episodes we watched?
Frasier.
Right. Let's see how this goes. This might be the first episode where the released version doesn't have a TLDL.
I'll say the word wings. Wings. And then you can just...
Shut up.
Edit that in.
Shut up. Andrew, who was funnier? Bill McNeil. Now listen carefully, all right? Funnier.
Don't say Niles. Basically saying don't say Niles.
Oh, I guess that was Andrew's inner voice. His morals speaking up, a little angel on his shoulder. Keep going, little voice. Okay, who was funnier? Bill McNeil. Again, he was played by Phil Hartman. Okay, Bill McNeil Niles Crane or Brian Hackett? Don't you dare say Niles Crane.
Ethan Ward.
I'm sorry, dude. I have to say Niles.
Well, hey, you know, if you truly feel that way.
I do.
Before going on to the next question, John, I think you're a little more reasonable. Seriously, would you say Niles Crane, out of the stuff we saw for this podcast, do you think Niles Crane was the best out of the three, funny-wise?
Yes!
Oh my god.
I want to preface it with that, yes, Phil Hartman is hilarious, and Steven Weber is hilarious, and these are, like, I'm going to say titans of sitcom comedy. So it really warms my heart to see David Hyde Pierce stepping up and keeping up with these guys and even surpassing them in some cases.
How much you guys seem to love Frasier and how I didn't like it.
Of course not.
What do you think the reason is for that? Why do you guys agree and I don't?
Well, you have terrible taste, first of all.
Whoa, wait a second. I'm the host of this show, so of course I don't have bad taste.
I don't think you have terrible taste. I'm saying this as a friend.
Oh, no.
I listened to your shorts episode about Laserdisc.
Mm-hmm.
You have contrarian taste. It's not bad. I just think you know that everyone loves Frasier, and you don't like it anymore. I listened to you talk about how good Laserdisc was, and there was no irony in your voice.
Well, of course not. Not for the episode, but obviously I'm going to ham it up if I'm talking about Laserdiscs. Well, it's funny you say that, because growing up, I don't remember a lot of people liking Frasier. And I was talking to my dad about doing this episode, and he's like, yeah, I don't get Frasier either. I never watch that stuff. But let's look at the socioeconomics, maybe. I don't know. I was lower middle class. Andrew was probably the most well-off out of the three of us. Maybe that has something to do with it, but that doesn't make sense why John likes it so damn much.
Growing up, son of a farmer and a single mother. It really is the opposite of what my life was.
But all right, I mean, I can't argue with its success. It had more seasons than the other two shows. I just want you to know you spat on Phil Hartman's grave, and you're going to have to deal with the ramifications of that later on. Karma will get you. John, what was the best heartfelt scene from any of these shows today, specifically Frasier? Just say Frasier. Say something in Frasier.
I do want to say, I'm going to give you the wings. I want to give you wings. I want to give you the overeaters meeting for wings. If you're forcing me into Frasier, I do...
No, that was enough.
Okay.
Let's be honest. If you say anything about Frasier right now, I'm just going to edit it out.
I will honestly agree that of these shows that we watched, I probably did pick the weakest of the heartfelt moments. It's a tough one for me to pick between the Eataholics and when Dave's talking with the coma guy. I forgot his name. I'm sorry.
Jimmy James.
Jimmy James, thank you. Coma Jimmy James.
Coma Jimmy James.
I did like that one, but I think the Overeaters meeting was a good one. I will give you that, Frank. You picked a good episode.
And I think you're projecting. You say I'm a contrarian. Out of all my guests, when I throw out episode topics, Andrew, you're the first one to admit on multiple episodes that when we talk about it, you're like, you know, okay, maybe I was wrong. I guess this wasn't really good for this episode, but I wanted to do it anyway.
That's not contrarian. That's me not understanding the prompt.
Yeah, because they're really complicated prompts.
That's me not understanding the prompt or not remembering something well enough to be like, oh, wait a minute, like, huh.
What have I done?
Yeah.
Well, I think you're going to like this next question, Andrew. Who would you rather see do a guest appearance on Frasier? Lowell the mechanic or Matthew the whatever the hell he does?
Matthew the... Andy Dick? Oh, no. Andy Dick is canceled. Give me Lowell.
And this might make you want to watch Wings more. After Cheers came Wings, and they take place in the same universe. And then Frasier premiered after Wings. And on Wings, Frasier Crane does appear, along with Rebecca Howell, Kirstie Alley's character, and Norm and the other guy.
Cliff?
Yeah. All of them make guest appearances on Wings.
Did you just say Wings is a spinoff of Cheers?
It's not. It's
Or it's just the actors.
No, it's not, but it's set in the same universe.
Oh, like one of those network crossover events. Okay.
Well, but it makes a little more sense because they all take place or had their start in Massachusetts.
Yeah, they're close. Nantucket's close to Boston.
And they're consistent with it. It doesn't feel like just a one-off thing. It feels very connected.
That's one of the things I miss about 90s TV is crossovers, where it's just, all right, you know, let's put our other people in this show. And I do miss a good crossover episode.
And that's the thing. Okay, as much as I'm not the biggest fan of Frasier, I do remember his episode on Wings, and I really liked him as a guest star. I thought he was great energy on it. Because he also appears with his with B.B. Newworth, who played his wife.
Oh, yeah, Lilith?
Lilith, yeah, she's on the show too, on Wings, and they're a funny couple. John, what backdrop added most to their respective shows? A Seattle radio station, a New York radio station, or a Nantucket airport?
It's got to be the Nantucket airport. Talking about all those cameos, I feel like every single cameo that ever happened on Wings was the character was just a passenger in the plane.
Yeah, it was totally justified.
Yeah, did they ever walk through any of the other sets?
Yeah, they would walk through the airport, but sometimes their cameos would just be on a flight.
Yeah.
I confess I might be a little biased, but I like your answer. Andrew, who was your favorite female performance from What We Watched? From What We Watched. Lisa on News Radio, Daphne on Frasier, or Casey on Wings?
I'm going to say Casey on Wings, only because at the end of the Fat episode, when she was like, why certainly? Just because I'm a huge Three Stooges fan. I thought that was funny. Although I will say I have a bone to pick with Wings. Because of their Three Stooges representation. Because the episode they were showing, the short, was Disorder in the Court. That's one of my favorite Three Stooges shorts. And they made reference to a power drill going into Curly's ear. And I'm 99% sure that never happens in that episode.
That is a real deep cut.
That's bad on Wings.
Bad on Wings.
They should have done their research, and they did not.
Everything else they mentioned was accurate. They put his head in a vice, they were poking eyes, but no, there weren't any power drills in that one.
But see, Andrew, it's comments like that that confirm for me that you're on the right show. Andrew, which sibling relationship, again via What We Watched, was greater, Frasier and Niles or Joe and Brian?
I'm going to have to say Frasier and Niles.
Okay, for the record, you had to laugh while you said that, because even you know it's ridiculous, but that's all right, that's your answer. And the last one for you, John. What do you relate to the most? Waiting for an open table at a cafe, difficulty quitting caffeine, or eating your feelings?
This is a loaded question. I don't know if I want to answer this.
That's not a nice TLDL.
Yeah, that's not nice. You're basically just calling me fat.
No.
I eat my feelings. If we all answer this one, maybe it'll make it better. I eat my feelings.
Obviously, I eat my feelings. I eat everything.
I definitely related most to Brian.